Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Collection Point by Dane Lescombe. Read by the author, with music by the author.
The platform began moving forward with very little noise, and John Schumer started sweating in his air-conditioned spacesuit. The colorless slab was riding on a single rail, 15 centimeters wide at most. The featureless track wasn't connected to any support beams or struts, and didn't look as if it could support any weight at all. Yet astronaut John Schumer was moving slowly forward. He kneeled on the 5-foot square platform, his body poised to strike. "I'm 10 meters from the entrance." The comm crackled with a reply. "Copy that." Schumer looked back at the microfilament line extending from his heavy saddlebag. The wire reeled out slowly, but was never slack, as a computer program let it out at a regulated rate. It was so thin he could only see it when the sun glinted off its surface. "My lifeline," he thought, and sighed into his space helmet. This lifeline was one of the last-ditch efforts to keep contact with the astronauts as they entered the alien craft. They had lost 32 drone rovers and 6 humans to the alien cylinder within 2 months of its appearance on Earth. Each had entered through the same round orifice Schumer was heading towards, and not a scrap had returned. The orifice immediately closed after each astronaut entered, and signals of every conceivable kind had failed to escape from within. The hope was that the microfilament line would be thin enough it would not be severed when the aperture closed, locking Schumer inside. The gaping mouth of the craft loomed, and the rail he was riding on disappeared in a curtain of darkness just inside the door. The midday sun made the contrast complete, and Schumer rode his unstoppable train onward until he was engulfed in darkness. Switching on suit lights, he choked as he finished the sentence, feeling the door close behind him and assuming he would get no reply. The radio buzzed with a, "We copy, Schumer. Good luck." Silence. A red light lit up in his helmet's display, and he felt the saddlebag vibrate as it reeled in the severed lifeline. Zip! The computer-controlled reel finished its business. He thought it was a stupid idea anyway. His body was tense and controlled. He wasn't like the others, and he knew it. The first humans to enter had all been scientists, boasting more degrees than you could list, trained in every conceivable aspect of a first contact mission. By comparison, Schumer's first contact training was maybe catching a few minutes of an old Star Trek episode before switching over so he could enjoy a football game. He was woefully unprepared for things to go right, but couldn't be more ready for things to fall apart. He was a decorated soldier before he joined NASA, and had survived some intense scrapes without losing his cool. The suit lights illuminated the featureless alcove with the platform rail spanning from one wall to another aperture exactly like the one he had just passed through. As the platform continued forward, he noticed debris on the floor below. It looked to be the remains of 3 or 4 of the AI rovers. On the second week, Mission Control had sent the robots in pairs, one on the moving platform and another to try to obstruct the orifice before it cut off radio contact. The desperate scientists had to watch their expensive robots fight a slow losing battle with the aperture as it deliberately and methodically cut them in two without showing the least resistance. Other than the debris, the room was empty, and the rate of motion was slow enough for Schumer to carefully dip into his bag. He brought out a heavy set of clamps with glowing electronics attached and leaned back to reach the rail behind his platform. With a clunk, the clamps attached, and a green light lit up in his helmet's display. This was a special transmitter that used powerful low frequencies that were then modulated with his voice. Scientists waited outside the craft with delicate sensors attached to his rail, hoping to receive the vibrations with his message attached. They were supposed to send a response signal showing that there was a connection, but Schumer didn't expect that light to turn green. It never did. He was on his own. In the next chamber, a glowing light began to pulse, infusing the shadows with some unknown color. A lifetime of combat expertise told Schumer that this was the moment. Whatever was going to happen to him was happening now. He reached in his bag for his last and most desperate communications device. His fingers crept over the grip that was carefully holstered on the side of the bag. It looked like a firearm, almost shotgun-sized, in fact, but it was a possible lifeline to the world outside the craft. It was a compact missile launcher for a tiny dart-sized projectile with enough propellant that it could puncture almost any armor and survive. Then, instead of exploding like a normal missile, it would transmit a message to the crew waiting for it outside. He primed the audio recorder to begin its message the second he spoke and terminate the recording when he pulled the trigger. Schumer had been told to use this method only if all hope of return was lost. It was incredibly crude and could possibly be seen as a threat, but at this point they needed any information they could get. His eyes gradually adjusted to the unnatural light throbbing on the other side of the room. It was a viscous, cloud-like radiance diffusing in every direction. He began to piece together an outline of something sharing the space with him. A glowing mass appeared to be clinging to the ceiling and much of the back wall. Moist tendrils extended in every direction, wafting in the still air of the room in a drowsy way. Whatever it was, the thing was clearly alive. For a moment, he thought the light from the creature was getting brighter, but soon realized one of the tendrils was reaching towards him. The platform he stood on crept forward, and Schumer quickly looked for an escape route. As he searched the room, he realized the ground level was again strewn with debris. But this time, it wasn't all robotic. He was staring at the remains of the 6 humans sent into the craft, and once he recovered his senses, he noticed the tip of the creature's tendril was centimeters from his helmet. He brought the missile launcher up to block the creature, and was about to shout into the recorder's microphone when the creature's arm easily punctured the Perspex faceplate. John Schumer's pulse rate dramatically slowed and his entire body relaxed. 48 seconds later, the projectile dart punctured the outer wall of the ship and effortlessly plunged its way through the 50 feet of carbon nanotube layered concrete that the scientists had erected to catch it. The short audio clip was received, and the general pulled on a pair of headphones. It was the first information to leave the alien craft since its arrival. It was the last word anyone would ever hear from astronaut John Schumer. The recording began with a short gasp and then a few moments of silence. Then, Schumer's voice whispered, "Beautiful."
To Seek Man by Mary Collier. Read by Jean-Paul Garnier. Music by Luke Poole. To Seek Man. Deaton adjusted the scanning probe. Once the male came into focus, she locked in and headed down. The male grew larger on the screen. His arm was upraised, his hand clenched at the spear. His muscles rigid while the desert wind whipped his blue cloak against his full athletic body. His sturdy legs were bare, and this allowed Deaton the opportunity to appraise every aspect of the well-balanced creature. He was a glorious example. How had Oricom known to predict this land and that male so exactly? The sisters had not consulted the Oricom for centuries. They had no need of its predictions. They had the sperm banks. Who needed to seek a man? If only Acta hadn't indulged so liberally while consuming the Krelian buzz liquid. She had remained under its influence while hallucinating for days. No one minded. Acta had muttered such fantastic rhymes, spouted the most hilarious tidbits of gossip, and had offered all manner of ribald observations on the ways of the ancients. They thought the effects had ended after 2 weeks, but Acta had become obsessed with finding a male and imitating the ancients. She had searched for a man, ransacking each and every chamber in her section. She pulled out costly equipment in a mad frenzy. She was put into restraints and sustenance withheld. Medical ran a feeding tube down her throat. 1 month later, she begged to be released. She assured everyone that she was sane again and did not want a live, physical man. Sperm was good enough for her. For 2 days, she attended to her duties perfectly. Then, while everyone slept, she crept into the biosphere and wrecked 4 centuries of waiting, frozen sperm. It was a disaster for our people. Only 1 male child had been allotted to the breeders this century, and there were but 2 sisters carrying. Both of their embryos were female. Our race would end with the death of the youngest. All formed a solemn line behind the Great Mother as they approached the unused Oricom chamber to present their petition. The Great Mother unlocked the door and everyone followed her into the room. There was a silence while she presented the petition. Where in this vast universe is there a compatible species of similar genetic composition and coloring? The wait began. 2 days, then 3 days passed. Everyone had abstained from food and drink except for water. Most chose to speak in whispers. On the 3rd day, the Great Mother emerged and called us all together. Oricom has given the coordinates. She has blessed us with selecting 1 warrior to accomplish this task. Deaton, you are the one. Deaton had squared her shoulders and bowed low. Before leaving, she had bid family and friends goodbye. Then she sped across the lonely places. The male standing below was suitable indeed to fill the depleted sperm banks, and maybe, just maybe, she would be granted the privilege of procreating in the olden manner. There were wild tales of barbaric rites that once had been practiced. Hadn't Acta expounded on them? There were also reports of other star systems where beings still practiced going to a secluded space together, and the man and the woman doing things to each other. Deaton wondered why this thought always raised her curiosity and a desire to experience this sensation just once. Deaton checked the scan for any intruder. There were just the 2 below her, the male and the smaller creature he had been pursuing. Was the second a child? Both were staring upward at her ship. She noted the man's wide lips, crisp, curled hair, wide shoulders, and muscled torso. She hoped everything else was in proportion. The other appeared female, but was amazingly lighter, more of a bronze color. The hair was dark and straight, and although the mammary glands were large, the creature was grotesquely short. The sand swirled around the ship as Deaton landed. She lowered the lift and then adjusted her working tunic. The male and female spread themselves at her feet as she stepped out. The female was making strange noises. Deaton dissolved her to end her misery. It was obvious the female was going to be forcibly taken as a mate. She had saved her from a great deal of distress. She prodded the male with her boot. He quivered, the muscles contracting in the most fascinating way. She used his spear to lift his head. His eyes opened, and he must have realized that what had appeared from the heavens was a woman taller than he was. His eyes were liquid black. The iris was almost as dark as the pupil. But his facial skin had turned an alarming shade of gray underneath the healthy black skin. His eyes rolled, and he shook his head. "Allah, have mercy," wailed from his throat. It would be easy to stun and levitate him into the craft. The technological gap was too much for this primitive. He would have to be restrained during the journey. Perhaps suspended animation was the best option to avoid any injury to his necessary body parts and internal functions. A pity, as there would be no chance to become acquainted, and he would have been the first of his kind to see his world from above. The welcome was all that Deaton had anticipated. The Great Mother was there to greet her. The Great Mother's massive body was gloriously clothed in shimmering red. Her many daughters stood behind her and were carrying all her emblems of power. "You, my dear space traveler, may watch the awakening by my side. Your name will be with those chosen to mate with him." Deaton's long journey had given her an opportunity to reflect on how childbearing would interfere with her space travel. "Great Mother, I have been honored sufficiently by your attendance here and welcoming words. All those that mate with him should be from the proven breeders." The Great Mother frowned. "It must be some stalwart like you. Our medics have determined that his primitive ways might induce him to be violent with a weaker mate. We do not wish to frighten him by obtaining healthy sperm by other methods. We want him alive and healthy for several years." the Great Mother turned. "Follow me." Her command included Deaton, and the crowd left the pavilion and surged down the wide halls into his sleeping chamber. Everything was hued a soothing pink, and it was lit by pink crystals. "All this to relax him?" someone muttered. A younger sister could be heard giggling. Medic Abby waved her hands for attention. "Quiet, everyone. He's coming out of the cryonic-induced sleep. We've inserted a trans chip for his lingual patterns to match ours." She bent her cropped, dark head over the male while intoning, "Wake now. There is no danger here. You will find companionship and peace." The powerful figure stretched and sat up slowly before looking around the room. His jaw sagged at the sight of so many females. "Can you stand?" Abby asked. He nodded and swung his bare legs over the edge of the bed. He extended one foot, and then another before standing. To the assembled crowd, he was a delightful example of maleness. He was at least 6 foot tall, and there was no apparent atrophy from his imposed sleep. His breath, however, was coming in short jerks. "Good, good," muttered Abby, and looked at him with a smile before continuing. "We are your new companions. You have been given the privilege of selecting one of the younger sisters for a guide while you accustomed yourself to our ways." The male searched each face. "Where is she? That miserable woman I was chasing. My master will be angry if I don't bring her back." "Master? You have no master here. We wish to be your friends." "I must return." His tenor voice was firm, filled with determination. Abby looked at Deaton for an explanation. "I left her there on that miserable planet. She was not suitable and there was no room." "Of course. A good decision. Thank you, Deaton." Abby turned back to the male. "You see, nothing can be done about it now. She isn't here. Do you see anyone that you appreciate?" She waited, anxious to be back to her studies. The male continued to look at them, his eyes finally focused on an opening in the milling crowd. They could see his muscles bunching as if to run. "Perhaps it would help if we introduce ourselves, then you could choose." He shook his head while snarling. "No, no." Abby continued as though there had been no interruption, the force of her words commanding attention. "I am Medic Abby. This is our Great Mother. You will respect and give her homage. Tell us what your calling is." He bowed and raised his head. "I am Chuta, third High Eunuch for the Im Sinna's harem." In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Collection Point by Dane Luscombe, with music by the author. To Seek Man by Mary Collier, with music by Lupo. Out Fall 2018, Simultaneous Times Volume 1 Science Fiction Anthology, with stories you've heard right here on this podcast. Look for it at SpaceCowboyBooks.com.